You're listening to Vatican Radio. A Vatican summit of judges from around the world opens on Friday to discuss ways of combating human trafficking and organized crime. The two-day meeting has been organized by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and is scheduled to include an audience with Pope Francis and the signing of a final declaration. Over 100 magistrates, prosecutors and representatives of legal organizations from around 20 different countries will share best practices from their experience of working to fight trafficking, slave labor and the trade in human organs. In particular, they will be exploring how they can better incorporate humanitarian values into their legal systems, how to enhance judges' appreciation of the needs of survivors and how money confiscated from the traffickers can be directed towards their victims. Among those addressing the opening session of the meeting is Ambassador Susan Coppedge, the new US ambassador at large for monitoring and combating trafficking in persons. She spoke to Philip Hitchin about her own work in this field and about her hopes for the Vatican Conference.
I think it's wonderful the Vatican has convened judges and prosecutors and lawmakers from around the world to come in and talk about what they see are improvements that can be made in prosecuting trafficking cases and bringing justice on behalf of the victims.
It's a very well-attended conference, isn't it? People from all over the world.
I think there are more than 20 countries represented, and I'm proud to be part of the U.S. delegation.
You're an attorney by profession, a lawyer, and you started working in the Justice Department's environmental enforcement section, didn't you?
I did. I started out prosecuting polluters and collecting fines, and then I met individuals who had been trafficked and felt a real calling to go in and represent them and our judicial system in the U.S.
And yet I imagine that this must have been a significant shift towards what seems to be a more difficult and more dangerous area of work.
I don't think of it as dangerous. I look at it as helping the individuals that didn't have a voice. I used to stand next to young women. Those were predominantly the cases I worked on were young women in court as they spoke to a U.S. federal judge. And these were women who thought law enforcement would not believe them, who thought their families had abandoned them. And here they were telling a federal judge their story, and he would believe them.
So it was a very personal experience for you. That was what drew you to the work in the first place.
It was. It was a great experience to be able to give a voice and representation to people who felt like society had overlooked them.
Where were most of these women coming from? What was their background?
They were really from all over. Anybody that had vulnerabilities, and those could be runaways in the U.S. who had suffered abuse or neglect at home. They could be runaways who just didn't get along with their parents, and all of a sudden they don't have a place to sleep or a way to get food, and traffickers find these young people and exploit their vulnerabilities. There were also young women from Brazil, from Mexico, from Honduras and Guatemala. I had cases involving young women from Nigeria and India, so really all over the world.
And the traffickers themselves, the gangs, where were they being organized or directed from, if you like?
I found in working on these cases that you tend to traffic your own, meaning Mexican men would recruit these young Mexican girls because they knew how to speak to them. They knew they could threaten their families because they had met the girls' parents during the process of romancing them and convincing them that they were going to have a better life in the U.S. Traffickers trade in lies, and when the lies don't work, they trade in threats, and when the threats don't work, they become physically violent. And so you tend to exploit those that you know the most about. The Nigerian case I had was a woman who had recruited two young women consecutive to each other to come over and be nannies for her in the U.S. So that was a form of domestic servitude. And similar to the Indian woman, she had recruited someone in India. So you tend to exploit your own people.
From this experience, what do you see as the key to prevention? What is the best way of helping people who are particularly vulnerable to these traffickers?
Well, at the State Department, we talk about reaching out to and educating the public about what trafficking is so that they know what the crime looks like and know not to believe things that are promised to you that sound too good to be true, because in fact, many times they are. We also talk about erasing the vulnerabilities that people face, whether those are economic or social, or if there are any sort of impediments to education. So by raising the rights of girls and women everywhere, you're decreasing their vulnerability to trafficking.
You've had significant success, haven't you, in prosecuting these pimps and traffickers, in putting people behind bars. Does each jail sentence feel like real progress, or do you sometimes think that this is a tide that really is never going to turn because it's such a huge phenomenon that seems to keep on growing?
No, I think for each sentence is progress for the victims and justice for the victims in that case. I also think each sentence sends a deterrent message out to other traffickers that there are consequences for this crime. This is a crime for traffickers of economic opportunity, and as long as they think they can make money with no punishment, they will continue to perpetuate these crimes. But once they know that there is a punishment and a price to be paid, we hope that that sends a deterrent effect to their criminal activity.
As you say, you've worked very individually with a lot of these girls. You've worked on cases where children as young as 12 were being forced into prostitution. How easy is it for a child who's been through that horrific experience to return to some kind of normal life again after that?
Yeah, I was really impressed at how resilient young people are. Many of the victims that we worked with, it sometimes takes in the U.S. a year for a case to get to trial. The youngest girl, the one you mentioned, the 12-year-old, she had gone back to school and she had learned English. And she walked into court so proud of the progress that she had made and wanted to show her trafficker that the lies he had told her weren't true. He had told her she was worthless. He had told her she was fat. He had told her no one else would love her. And she walked into court able to show him that she was becoming a young adult. And it was very meaningful.
So these are stories that give you real hope on a personal level as well as you say, professionally being a real story of success.
Yeah, they do give me hope. And not all trafficking victims are going to be success stories because they did have vulnerabilities to begin with. And we need to address the systemic problems in societies that cause, again, young women, children and men to be vulnerable.
You're a great believer, aren't you, in partnerships, in working together with churches, faith groups, NGOs and so on in this work. The Catholic Church has really stepped up, I think, its commitment over recent years in working on prevention and protection of survivors. What else would you like to see? How else can the Church really become an effective force to stop trafficking?
I think the Church and other non-governmental organizations are very effective because they're out there among the people and they can educate the public and they can send out this message of caring for your fellow citizen. I think that is so important. One of the first NGOs I worked with was the Catholic Church in Atlanta, and they were providing services to international victims who were found in the U.S. I continue to speak to faith groups. I think they're so important in bringing the message of love and forgiveness to trafficking victims so that they know they can move on from their past and have hope for their future.
Pope Francis has also spoken out very strongly, hasn't he? He's called this a crime against humanity. Does that have any impact? Does it really make any difference, these kind of forceful denunciations?
Oh, I think they do. And I think this particular Pope, Pope Francis, has done a remarkable job at raising the issue of victimization of individuals based on economic imbalances, based on other societal causes. I think he has done a tremendous job of raising the profile of trafficking worldwide.
He was also part of an interfaith declaration against trafficking, again, trying to bring people together across the different faith traditions.
Yeah, I think it has to be multi-faith, multidisciplinary, different countries, because the problem is just not a north-south or east-west problem. It's a problem that's pervasive in our new global society, and the global society has to tackle it. So no matter what faith a person comes from, they need to recognize the worth and value of the human being and the human spirit.